welcome to McCormick & Stiles monthly podcast. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about the new legislation and guidelines that have come out, and probably just a general chit-chat about lots of other things.
If you've got any comments or questions, our email address is mccormickandstiles@gmail.com. Just drop us a message there and we can include it in the next one. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the new legislation that's just been released now. So what do we think about that then?
Well, I think it's thrown everybody up in the air, hasn't it? Because there's quite a lot of things in there that are quite ambiguous in its reading. And there's a lot of new things that are going in there about what... It's quite presumptive, really. There's a few things that have been said. For example, they don't like the word and term de-schooling. They see and deem that as you not providing a suitable education.
Which is silly, really, because it's... For all these years, even the local authorities have said how valuable that is, that time after. You don't know what that child's been through in the school system. Mm-hmm. You know, they could be bullied, they could be, you know, so mental health issues, you just don't know. So they've also got to find their feet, and the family's got to find their feet. So it's just such a big change for that alone, isn't it?
It is. I mean, they do say that there are, they obviously, you know, are aware that they're going to need some time to find your fee, but they kind of think that you should be able to do that relatively quickly and straight into some kind of education. But they're forgetting the whole reason why a lot of us are choosing to home educate in the first place. Is generally because the school way, amongst all its other difficulties, has not worked for our child. So we're not going to be jumping straight into the school way very quickly. It says that, you know, you can be an autonomous learner. You can learn by not having to follow the curriculum. But that takes time as well, you know, to find your feet. And I think what I found quite frustrating about the new guidelines is there's a lot of expectance on our part. For example, they quote that they don't like to see a child in isolation for too long, not mixing with peers, being isolated. But, you know, we're hearing a heap of stories lately about special education children in isolation, you know, daily, weekly at the minute. And if that's not, and one tragic case at the moment where a child tried to attempt to take her life, being in isolation, and that's in school. You know, so what I find frustrating about all of this is it's not on equal footing. Mm. If they expect this of us, you know, to jump through hoops and to provide, which we can actually, then why is school not doing that?
Yeah, exactly. It is very unfair, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the unfair part about it. If I think school were held to the same accountability as we are, we would be on an equal footing, but then
and maybe there wouldn't be so many families that needed to home educate.
Yeah.
If the schools were following the same guidelines.
Exactly. So I think that's what's created a lot of frustration. There's a lot of presumption about there being things being unsuitable. So firstly, it states that you don't legally have to allow there to be any formal contact. You don't have to do that. But in the next breath, in the next sentence, it says if you don't do that and you do look like you're trying to abstain from meeting or giving information, then you might be classed as given an unsuitable education.
When you say contact, you mean contact with the local authorities who are
So they say that they think and they should be making informal contacts to start with, but actually, as I've read that, the informal contact could be meeting the child. That to me isn't really informal, especially if you've got a child who is on the spectrum, any other anxiety, mental health issues, is not going to be happy sitting speaking to a stranger. You know, for a start, that to me isn't an informal contact. For me, I would have thought an informal contact would have been an email, a bit of paperwork, just briefly outlining what you're doing. You know, that to me is an informal, you know, step. But to me, they've taken it the next level. And I think what it's done is it's made people really panic, hasn't it? It's made people think,
Oh my God,
I'm not going to be able to do this, I'm not going to be able to do that.
And I think it's because it's so unclear what is actually wanted from us, it's so open to interpretation from different people who are pulling out different things from this report, really, aren't they? And reading it in such a different way that it is really difficult to know clearly what is expected.
Yeah. And, you know, if they're not going to be very specific in what they want, then it leaves a lot of ambiguity and a lot of room for failing and not meeting their expectations. So they've tried to be quite open, but in the next breath, they're not really giving you any specific instructions neither. I don't know. I think they want us to be on a register, don't they? Which, yeah, I think is what's really infuriated people. I think we, you know, at the moment, we would be the only, they would be on a register. Apart from that, I think it's sex offenders, isn't it, on a register?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's infuriating to think that home educators need to be registered, are going to be on a register.
Mm.
And I think they're blowing a whole lot of things out of proportion, really. I think where their main concern is why some children have been pushed out of school unlawfully, I can understand that they would want to be in contact with those children and parents. But they are, because if it's done through the proper channel, they're going to know of these children. They're not invisible children, are they? Because those that have been deregistered from school would have been on a register. And to deregister, you've had to have spoken to the local authorities. So how is that invisible?
Yeah, I know. It just seems so strange that, you know, this. And also, what I sort of took from it as well is, it's going to be very much dependent on the local authority who is reading the document, who is in that position to read the document. If you've got someone that is very understanding of home ed and knows how it works, then okay, that might be fine.
Yeah.
But if you've got somebody on the other hand who hasn't a clue,
exactly,
reading through this paperwork, and their only idea of education is via school, they're not going to sort of know. No. How to deal with it, are they? And there's going to be a lot of people that are flagged up.
Exactly. Well, they are now. I mean, there's a lot of local authority officers that do just turn up on the doorstep, demand to come in. And although you think that you've shown them what you think is a correct and suitable, they then go back and report you to social services. And unfortunately, that's been a bit of a growing trend with some not very well thought of local authorities.
So I was always made to think that that was two separate areas. So you couldn't, like, the education side of it is one thing, but the social services referrals and everything was a completely separate thing. Mm. And they weren't actually supposed to link the two together.
You would think so, but actually that's been happening quite a bit. And I think this is the problem. It's like you said, you know, you're going to get those that aren't doing it properly. You're going to give them basically free rein now to be doing it even more, doing it worse. And I just think the whole thing is really ambiguous. It says that each local authority should have their own policy. And I think that's going to be as good as the local authority writing it, you know, good as the people enforcing it. So I don't know. I think it's going to take people a while to settle down. I think it's going to take, I've read it quite a few times and I'm still reading through it. I've read the local authorities one, I've read the parents one, and, you know, they're 40, some of them are 45 pages long. It takes a while to get through it. But yeah, I just think it's thrown a lot of people up in the air, and I think it's going to take people to have a, you know, get together really, rally together and have a real good think about what it actually is saying, because at the moment it's just not making much sense.
Mm.
You know, like I said, it said 1 minute you don't have to have anybody in, but if you don't, it looks like you're being avoidant. What does it want then?
Yeah.
It definitely wants you to come in, or it doesn't. What are you saying?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. There's so many of the points are really like that, aren't they?
It's not clear enough, and I think it's not fair, because actually the vast majority of parents who have pulled their children out of school have done so for very good reason. You know, they've not just suddenly decided I fancy home educating tomorrow and they're off we go. And I think there's issues with safeguarding any student and any child. And that goes right the way through school. And I think that's where the hypocrisy is. You know, if things were geared up so these failings didn't happen in school, we wouldn't be in such a situation as we are now. You know, it's a terrible mess, really. So I'm going to keep reading through it until I've got it. And I think that is the key thing. I think you do need to read through it. And I think it's easy to panic, but I wouldn't stop what you're doing. Just suddenly start thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to do maths for 3 hours a day now. I'm going to have to do literacy for 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And panic and change, because that would be the worst thing you could probably do at that moment.
I think that's exactly how I'm going to move forward with it at the moment. It's in my mind. It's in the back of my mind all about the document and what is expected. But I'm still going to carry on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The way I always have done.
Yeah.
Because that's what works for my family. And why should I change if it works?
Yeah. There's also a part on there about the children's rights, and they do have a right. They do have a say in this, you know, and their wishes do have to be taken into account. And, you know, if the child is telling you that I am loving being home educated, I, you know, I'm doing really well and all the rest of it, I don't see, they've got to listen to that.
Yes.
You know, ultimately they've got to listen to that. And I think where it's difficult for us unschoolers, autonomous learners, is we do things in a very different way to the structured curriculum way. That doesn't mean to say they're not learning literacy and maths and science and all the things that go into it, but they're doing it in a very different way. That doesn't make it wrong, you know. So if you're going to get a local authority person that comes in who is used to seeing on paper some math sheets that you've done today, you're not going to find that really within a home in an autonomous learner's environment. But what you will see is they've probably been baking today and they've been weighing and measuring. They've been out probably digging and measuring some flower beds. They've been to the shops and sorted out their money and, you know, bought things. For example, look at our children today are meeting up and they're doing, they're playing a card game that involves literacy, social skills, maths. So if you had somebody who really knew what they were on about, they would understand that our children are learning, but they're learning in a natural way.
Mm. It did also say somewhere in there about evidencing their, what they're, not necessarily what they're learning, but evidencing the fact that they have progressed.
Mm.
So how would you go about that as an autonomous learner?
Yeah, well, it's going to be a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if you're, I think, the key thing there is the outcomes, and I think to get that on paper, you've got to just think a little bit outside the box. So I would say my child who once wasn't socially able to mix in groups now can. That's an outcome. That's a measurable outcome, you know, they can. It's going to be difficult, I think, to get that on paper. What's going to be difficult is if you've not got an open-minded person from the local authority who wants to see evidence, even though it says you're not legally required to show evidence, but it looks like you're avoiding them if you don't. We're going to have to just think outside the box a little bit. So you're going to have to put down that, you know, maybe we did baking today, we did maths today, we did some card games, we did some literacy today, we went out and we, you know, went to the museum, we did a bit of history today. So you're going to have to just think outside the box to prove that. But it's a shame. We're already thinking about how to prove that when you've got a child in front of you who's thriving.
Yeah.
That's a real shame, really, that we're worried about that. When we're taking, you know, we're actually saving the government a lot of money, and the schools and the local authority a vast amount of money by educating these children at home, aren't we?
You know. Definitely.
And all of a sudden they you know, it feels like they just want to sort of kick you in the back a little bit.
I mean, I wonder how long it's going to actually take to get this registration process up and running. I mean, it's got to be a lot of work, surely. Yeah.
Well, practically how they actually going to enforce visiting all these thousands of home educated families now, and how are they going to measure the outcomes of these each and every child? So it's going to be interesting to see how they go about that and what the next steps are from this.
Yeah.
It would also be, I think, worthwhile that actually they made contact with some home educators that have been doing it for a number of years, and maybe ask if they wanted to reach out to young families that are just starting home educating as well. But that would be good practice, you know, in that sense. It's such a shame because it's just causing gaps, divided gaps between us.
Is. And what, I mean, for those of us that have been doing it a while and we're confident in what we're doing, it's a different story. But I think for new people, beginners, new families who are just coming into it or have just found their feet and they're just kind of getting settled, it's a massive blow, I think.
Yes.
And I've seen posts from so many people where their confidence is knocked so badly they just don't even know what to do, which is really, really terrible.
It's really terrible because, you know, it's the... Also, you know, they're probably looking from an academic sense, the local authority, and what they're forgetting is that a lot of children who are home educated might have difficulties and be on the spectrum in other parts of their life. So we are helping them to become all-rounded, everyday people and helping them through their experiences as well as them trying to teach them academic stuff, you know. So it's not just an easy thing to be able to just do, is it? Yeah. And to show. So I think it's sad, really, because they're just causing a bigger divide. The fact that they want us on a register is pretty insulting, I think. I can see that they want to safeguard some children, but they're doing a pretty diabolical job of it in school at the minute.
That's exactly the thing. I mean, how do they safeguard the children that are in school?
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of sports. So we get one story of a home-educated child, you know, being abused or losing their life, which is terrible. But then to that, there must be so many more in school, in the school system, who are just lost.
Well, look at the children that are committing suicide through bullying. I mean, we hear, unfortunately, we see this all the time now. I mean, I don't know about you, but month after month, I'm seeing some child who's committed suicide because of the severe bullying. I mean, where's the safeguarding there? Where's the, you know, all the legislations they're putting into this home educated document into school, providing a safe environment that's suitable for their age and attitude and send needs, and this calm environment and safe environment. Where's that in school?
Yeah.
This just isn't fair. You know, it would be a different story if all the schools were perfect and getting it all right all the time, and then they say to us, but they're not. It's kind of a pot kettle black situation, yeah, I think, what they're doing at the minute. It's pretty sad because we know our children are thriving. You can see it in them every day, you know, how much they're thriving. And the community is actually thriving because of it as well. You know, the children can meet up as much as they want or not choose to meet up as much as they want. So I just think, you know, I think it's a sad state of affairs at the minute. I think it's caused a huge divide. But I do think parents just need to not panic at the minute.
Yeah.
It would be easy to go, oh my God, I can't home educate him. I can't pull him out of school. I won't remember what I'm going to be doing. Just nothing has changed in that sense. You're still legally, everything is legal still. You're still allowed to home educate a child. It's still allowed to be autonomous learning, it's allowed for curriculum. I just think it's become very ambiguous for us. There's nothing been really specific to be able to concentrate on. I think there's lots to come out over the next few weeks and months, really, with it. So we've not really, we're just scratching, and this is just the sort of the breath, isn't it, of the new guidelines at the minute. So everybody's just reading them, taking them in, and I think it's going to take weeks, probably even months, to sort of come out with what actually it is saying.
Yeah, definitely. It's an ongoing thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, this is the big news at the moment in all the groups and all over the community. It's what everyone's talking about and trying to make sense of how it's going to affect their own individual circumstances.
I just wish they would try and foster a good relationship between us. And if they want to do that, then I think as a collaborative, all of them need to get together and really listen to the home educators, or find a local authority that are doing it right and follow the best practice. Because what these new guidelines have done is that it has allowed each local authority to have their own policy. That could really be very different, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, so
it depends on who you've got in there.
So now it's going to be a postcode lottery about as to who's going to have some really good guidelines and be supportive and who isn't.
And I think, really, we've kind of had a little bit of that anyway, haven't we?
Yes.
So far, depending on who is in that department as to who comes out to see you. And some people have been really good, really understanding, just totally get it. And then others have just been terrible and have been so rude to the home educating families.
And I think that, and I think, you know, one of the worries, I think, for some is that you think you're being open, you're inviting them into your home, which you don't have to, you're showing them things that you're doing, and you think the meeting's gone very well, and actually afterward they've gone back and they've said the education's not suitable. So that's happened, unfortunately, to some bad local authority areas. So then that then puts you off again. It makes home educators want to hide when actually they've got nothing to hide. Yeah. That's the problem. We all go scurrying off because they don't...
How can somebody that comes in... Okay, so basically we have to provide a suitable education for the age and whatever of your child. How can somebody meeting that child for an hour tell what level they're at and what is suitable for them?
Yeah.
I don't understand how they can make that judgment against obviously a family who have known them obviously all their life.
Yeah.
How can somebody make that judgment?
Yeah.
It's wrong.
It is wrong. And, you know, our children don't get this in school. Again, you know, every child is supposed to have a differentiated lesson plan for each child's ability. Come on, that doesn't actually even happen either. You know, they're all assessed at the same... Look at the SATs, you know, and all the things. That's assessed at a level that all children should be at and all should be at the same...
That's not individual at all, is it? That's just saying that you should all be at this level.
Yes.
Either you're way below and you're doing rubbish,
yes,
or you're above and
exactly,
well done, congratulations. But
exactly,
it's not based on the individual child at all.
You look at parents' evening, everything is about those scores. You know, your child's underachieving here. You know, they're on a grade one here, or they whatever they are here. That's not to each child's learning ability. I think that's the biggest frustrating thing. It's just, you know, they're not as accountable as what we are. Like I said, I think it's going to take some weeks, months to digest the new guidelines and see what comes out over the next few months and weeks, really, and see what happens. But I think it's easier said than done, but don't panic, mm-hmm, I think, at the minute. And, you know, if your child is thriving, then you know what your child's interests are and likes, and just carry on as you're going, really.
Yeah. And also...
And reach out, perhaps, to home educators.
Exactly what I was going to say. Make sure that you know your support network. And if you're not sure, just ask. There's so many of us on the groups that are more than happy just to chat through any worries or concerns with anyone, really, who wants to talk about it. And that's why it would be so beneficial if they did actually speak to home educators.
Yeah.
Like you say, because some of us would actually be more than happy to chat to them.
Mm.
You know, and give them our sort of side of how things work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad, really. It would be really nice, I guess, I've got rose-tinted spectacles on, that in the end, that there was some kind of working relationship with them. Because, like I said, it's made home educators feel like they want to hide. And they have nothing to hide. We have nothing. But, you know, if you're being judged and scrutinised and on the basis of what you're doing, even though they got it wrong, it's not going to work. You know, it's really not going to work, because there are so many benefits to the home education. Mm. There's so many benefits to our unschooling autonomous way. The way that we've done it is such a smart cookie. You know, he outshines me in so many areas.
Yeah,
and the same for many other. You know, with home education, I can tailor it to him, you know, completely and utterly to him or all my children on how I want to do it. That does not happen in school.
No.
How does one teacher and 30 students manage to do that with every single student?
No. It just doesn't work. There's always going to be some children that are left behind.
Yeah.
Regardless. It's going to work for some, isn't it? But there's going to be the ones that aren't.
Yeah. I think the biggest... you know, we watched the Channel 4 dispatches, didn't we, on the Children's Commissioner who did the documentary, who literally just made it look appalling, really. And it's so sad, because they just keep getting the wrong end of the stick all the time and just taking what they want from it to suit their agenda. And it's just a shame, really, because it's just working for our children. School didn't work for them, you know, for whatever reason. And it would be all well and good if the local authority just said, yes, they want to just get those students who feel like they've been forced out of school. And then there are parents like that. Yes,
yeah,
there
definitely are.
They're not suddenly going to become experts overnight within a couple of weeks. And if you're going to go into their house and expect them to have everything set up and expect them to know exactly what they're doing with that child, you're going to serve a send back to school junction because you don't feel it's suitable, then you've got it all wrong. They've got it all wrong, haven't they?
That's the thing. Yeah, it is. It's so true. You know, if that system isn't working, how on earth are you going to know straight away what is going to work for them?
Yeah.
You, there's no way you could know that.
No.
I mean, even as like longer term home ed people, we change things, don't we?
Mm.
It's not like, I'm sure you're the same. Like how I'm home educating now was totally different 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Where, you know, it changes. It's a progress, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything... The children change, their interests change,
exactly,
how they learn change.
Exactly. And we change, don't we? We evolve all the time. And I think, you know, we keep up with that as parents and as educators. We're keeping up with that. And, yeah, it just feels like a slap in the face, I think, really. It never feels like there's a huge amount of support for us. it feels like they want to get out to get us. And although they say that that's not what they want, it's just not been the experiences across the board. I think when we start hearing much more positive stories about how the local authorities are dealing with these and schools are dealing with it, I think we're then going to be able to relax. But until then, it just makes you want to just avoid at all costs, which is a shame.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. So is the process for removing the child from school still the same?
It looks very similar. The processes still look very similar, but it's still read reasonably ambiguous. I'm sure I read it said something that actually you don't even have to legally send a letter in to withdraw the child, but if you don't, that could be seen as... It's really ambiguous, all of it. It's just, none of it seems to make sense. But they are still much the same. The way you educate a child with... saying the way you educate a child from mainstream, this process has seemed still very, very much the same.
So if you're removing a child from regular school, so I don't think we covered this in the first one, did we?
No. I could actually just look at the exact requirements, because it might be easier to just read them out and say, in case we get them totally wrong. There is so much to go through. So
does it actually say in the document?
Yeah,
about...
it does. It does actually. It's very specific on how it wants you to do it. Well, I say specific, it's really ambiguous, but it does tell you how it thinks you should deregister your child and not and what to do.
Right.
It is all there.
There we go.
Right. If your child has never been enrolled at school, you are under no obligation to inform the local authority that he or she is being home educated or gain consent for this. However, it is strongly recommended that you do notify your local authority of the fact in order to facilitate access to any advice and support available. Some local authorities operate voluntary registration schemes which are linked to support arrangements. If your child is currently on the roll of a school, you are not obliged to inform the school that he or she is being withdrawn from home education or to gain consent for this. This is the really weird bit. However, it is sensible to do so.
Why would you not?
In order to avoid subsequent misunderstandings as to how you intend to fulfil your parental responsibility for your child's education, the school is obliged to inform the local authority of children removed from its admission register and will give home education as the reason. If notified by this by the parent, parents of the children withdrawn from school or home education are not legally obliged to inform the local authorities themselves. But again, it is sensible to do so, either directly or using any local registration scheme which exists.
So that's... the first bit is just ridiculous. Why would you not tell the school?
Yeah.
You'd have the school ringing you every day.
Exactly. Whereas... And then you'd get them as marked as absent. And then you get EWO. And then you get fined for not attending school. So it tells ridiculous. You that you don't have to, but you do. So this is the problem. I wanted to touch briefly on... a lot of parents are having a lot of problems in school when their child is off with anxiety-related issues and mental health issues. They can't attend school because of their anxiety. They might be on the spectrum. And when the child is off, they're marked as absent. It is the number of absences unauthorised that spark the EWO, which is the Education Welfare Officer, to start paying an interest. If all of those absences are marked as authorised, the Education Welfare is not
so
interested.
So authorised by who? The school?
The school.
Right.
In order for that to be authorised, the school have to think, seeing that the children is off for a legitimate reason. Now, what they're actually asking is, they're asking parents to get sick letters from the doctors to prove that the child is off with anxiety or that the child is off. Which doctors are up in arms over. They're like, why am I having to write sick notes for children being off school? Because they won't mark it as authorised either way. And this is what the whole problem is with these parents being fined and taken through the court system, because their child are not fine in school. They have mental health issues. There's so much going on.
Surely the school would know that this child is struggling. Surely.
Oh, yeah.
They would know the child. So it's not like you've got a child where they're absolutely great, you know, love school, you know, and then they're off for a day. You'd probably go, why are they off school? Yeah. But if you've got a child that is quite clearly
It's still
anxious,
marked as unauthorised. And this is where the parents get fined. So it's the whole thing just stinks.
Yeah, it is really ridiculous.
You know, there's so many systemic failings within the school. I'm not berating any of the teachers, by the way. They're just, they're doing a job against all the grain, really.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, there's some amazing people out there, but the system is flawed. It stinks. And if you're going to look at why children are taken out of school by their parents, there will be a very good reason why. It's not quite the same for those that have chosen right from the beginning to home educate, like yourself, but that's the extremes, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, people who do it from the beginning, a lot of people just want to be left alone.
Yes.
They don't want the input of anyone else. You know, they're quite happy to go along on their own path and doing their own thing, which is working amazingly well. Why do you need to then involve? But then, like in there, it's saying, you know, if you don't involve the authorities or let the local authorities know, that might be seen as a negative.
Yeah.
Why?
So what is it saying? Do you want us to let you know or do you not? Be clear then. If you're going to say, well, you don't legally have to, but we want you to. What
if
then?
Just
what
kind
do
of
you
flouting
want?
Around the law. They know what the law is. Yeah. The law states you don't have to tell them.
No.
But they're kind of trying to get around that and say, well, if you don't tell us, then we're going to see that as a sign that something's not
right.
Well, actually, no. It's just a sign that we don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want
There's
your input.
Nothing wrong.
We wanted most of them wanted their input when they were in school. For those that have never been in a school, don't want your input. And when we've left school, we don't want your input because you weren't there in the first place.
Mm.
It literally is it. You know, there's so many children who have gone through education that are doing so well, going to college, going to uni, setting up their own businesses. Why are they not seeing all these children? What is it? What are they doing? It seems to me that they've got, I don't know, these binoculars on or something, and they're literally just seeing what they want to see.
Yeah. So what about, does it have any differences for children in special educational needs?
It's the same process.
It's the same process.
Yeah, it's the same process again, I think. It's just, it's exactly the same process that they've got. It says these points that what I spoke about previously before about how you deregister, these points also apply to children with an educational healthcare plan attending mainstream schools. However, if your child attends a special school and this was arranged by a local authority, then the permission of the local authority must be attained before his or her name can be removed from the admissions register. That's the same process.
Same process.
As it was before. That's really not changed. If the local authority refuses consent, you can ask the Secretary of State to settle the dispute. The other circumstances in which the local authority's consent is necessary is if your child is attending any school as a result of school attendance order. This order must be revoked by the authority before you can have your child's name removed from the admission register. So basically a child who's been off school and off-rolled for a long time would need consent from the local authority. Some of it reads basically that they think the schools are not doing their jobs very well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that they want to catch these before they come out, but there is a complaints procedure, and if that doesn't go and reach beyond the local authority, which most schools don't like to, they tend to keep it in-house and they have their own complaints procedures, don't they? So before it even gets to the local authority.
Yeah.
Something's very wrong, isn't it? It's been failing for so long.
Mm.
I think it would take not very long for a bunch of us mums to get together and sort out all these guidelines. We'd have it done and dusted.
Yeah, definitely.
With a roast dinner in the oven by the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, we're just going to have to wait and see, I think, aren't we,
on
that one. So what are we going to talk about now?
I don't know. I just wanted to get it across that for us unschoolers and autonomous learners, there are so many ways our children are learning that other people may not see it because it's not, you know, substantiated on paper. And I think they worry more than any other kind of home educator.
Yeah, definitely.
Those that sit down with their, you know, their structure, which is totally fine and you know, totally good. They have got something so much more to show physically on paper that doesn't make it any better or any worse than any other style of home educating. But it's just such a shame that that's the kind of thing that we think the local authority are edging towards. It's all this paperwork to substantiate what we're doing.
And do you think that in our experience, we didn't just begin and fall into home into unschooling? It took us a while to adapt in and evolve into that relaxed kind of education.
Yeah.
Do you think that people would sort of go immediately from the schooling system to unschooling? Is it usually a process that is gradually... You know what I mean? How did you go straight into that kind of unschooling way? Or?
Well, no. I like most probably people, came out of the school system thinking I've got to do replicate school at home. And that very quickly didn't work because it obviously didn't work in a school. It's not going to work out of school. Just because I'm at home, that's still kind of same kind of disciplined system of sitting down doing X, Y, and Z in a day is not going to work.
So maybe the people who are just starting out... or are just thinking of taking their children out or have just done recently in the past however many months and are panicking a little bit about the new legislation, they're probably not in schoolers anyway at the moment.
No.
So, or autonomous learners.
Yeah.
as we're now supposed to call it.
Yeah.
So it might be that they are still quite structured at the moment anyway, which is probably going to be beneficial to them because then they're probably going to have something on paper that they can actually say, well, this is what we've been doing.
Which the sad thing is, we shouldn't have to have it. And legally, we don't have to, but it's looking like that's the kind of thing that they want to see. I mean, for a long time, I kept loads of photos of all the work that we did, but not written kind of sit-down work of all the activities we went to and all the kind of things that we did. So I took a lot of photos because it worried me back then as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, so we went to the museum today and then we went and did a fossil dig this afternoon with them and then we did rah, rah, rah. And I thought, if I show them that, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be good. And I guess in some ways I'm not encouraging people to just suddenly start going out taking thousands of photos. But, you know, it might be an idea if you're an autonomous learner to think about those kind of things. But, you know, remember that, you know, your child... You and your child are the most important part of this process, aren't they? You know, you can see the rewards, your child's anxiety slipping away and all the good things that are coming out. So at the end of the day, you can see that benefit. And that is the most important thing, is that child thriving, not really what the local authority think should be happening.
Exactly. And it's like, how much do you keep? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're like... So you had four children that you were home educating.
Yeah.
How many bloody photos do you need?
Exactly. How much evidence are you going to have to provide?
What would I do with it all? I'd spend most of my time, rather than being with the children and supporting them in what they want to do, I'd be writing down stuff that we've done and, you know.
Yeah.
That would be, just take so much time.
It would.
And that is time that you could be doing... You know, spending time with your family and your children.
This is why somebody in the local authority is going to need to know that when we say we have been baking all morning, that we've been using maths and science and everything in that, when I say that our children are now playing, you know, a card game, they're doing their social skills and literacy and stuff in that. So somebody's going to have to really understand that.
Yeah.
You know, to know that there are ways of embedding all these skills that they want to see into everyday life. But we do that naturally.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to think, to put that into words, what we're doing. So I guess what I say to the autonomous and unschoolers is, you know that your child's learning all those things. It's putting it in a way, I guess, the local authority would want to see that.
Yeah,
but,
and that they can understand it. But
just don't panic. I think just stick to what you're doing, really. See that your child's thriving. And that's the most important thing. I think I'm not afraid to say that radical unschooling for us has been the best thing. It's allowed me to nurture my child's strengths and interests and his, you know, all the things that he does. I can embrace them.
Yeah. And also, really, I mean, unschooling and radical unschooling are not just about education.
They're not.
So they're kind of taking that phrase away from us unnecessarily, because it's not just about how we are educating them. It's a lifestyle.
And it says that in the guidelines. You know, your child basically has to be able to function in the world. It mentions that in the guidelines. But do they think a child from school can suddenly function in the world? You know, this is what unschooling is, you know, enabling your child, embracing everything that they are and encouraging them and learning through life. We know how smart cookies our children talk about anything, from politics to anything.
Yeah.
And they get it, they understand it, because we spend a lot of time talking about all these things with them.
Mm.
Vinny, I'm really sorry.
Should we talk about something else? Should we get a drink?
Yeah, what do you want?
Something that's not caramel.
I'm going to have coffee.
What have you got? I can't have coffee.
I've got loads of different ones.
Should I have one?
I've got spicy chai.
I'm going to end up.
I'll leave it recording and then. Is it still thinking anyway?
Yeah, still recording anyway. We can start again. Or should we just cut a bit out?
God, this has gone really bad today, isn't it?
It's still recording. Right, let's start again.
Okay. So, yeah, well, just, we want, it's been Autism Awareness Week, hasn't it? So, my son's got autism, he's autistic, so it's been something that's close to my heart, really. But really, over the years, I started to follow a lot more people who are autistic, and the actually autistic crowd on Twitter, on Facebook, because I think you will get literally the bare bones. You know, you need to follow people who have been through it and gone through it. And I think it's really difficult, this part, because whilst I know how epic all these mums are, there's a lot of groups out there, and I don't know how you feel about it. I'm not going to, you know, they're valuable groups, and I don't want to seem like I'm berating them. It just sometimes can come across as not, because they're so emotionally invested, it's hard to differentiate from the facts and, you know, things. So what I'm trying to say is I find the most benefit, and have found the most benefit from actually asking autistic people about situations.
Yeah.
Because it is, after all, them and their voices that need to be heard.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of them want to bring autism acceptance into it a lot more than autism awareness, because I think people do know what autism is now, but it's just a case, a kind of, they're still not kind of embracing it and accepting.
Yeah. I think, though, it might be difficult to make that judgment. I mean, obviously, you know, I've got children with autism as well, so obviously I know about it, and my family knows about it because of that reason. But if you didn't have any experience with autism, would you know about it? You know?
No, and I think that's the thing. I think it takes you through that journey, and I think now that I know, I didn't in the first, and I think what it does is it challenges ableism in a very bit. And I have to say, I did it myself years ago. And, you know, I've challenged my own internal ableism over the years when I first started out. And I think it's important to, everybody goes through that process. And I think once you know better, you do better. And I think it's important to remember that statement, because if you're not aware, you don't know. Mm. And you don't know how to do things in the right way. So you can't keep knocking yourself for not knowing those things. But once you know better, you know, there's really, I guess, you can do better. And my son's taught me most of the things about that. And, yeah, so there's a lot of actually amazing Facebook groups out there that are run by autistic people. And how really it's about using people's first language. You know, they are autistic people. They don't have autism, or they don't, it's not like, like saying they don't have a bit of femaleism. They are female.
Yeah.
That's how they like to be addressed as. There's so much that I've learned, and I think there are some amazing people out there that I think we need to listen to. And I think for parents who want to know about these people on Facebook or Twitter, if you type in the hashtag actually autistic, you will see lots of groups and people discussing things.
Yeah.
And they are not at all bothered by you asking questions. They would rather you ask them questions. If you've got any questions about any of your child's problems, you know, when it comes to anything that you're worried about, or any ways that you want to embrace and help, speak to them. Honestly, that would be my biggest advice.
How old was your son when he got a diagnosis?
So it takes forever to get a diagnosis. And I think it's probably a very, very difficult, long, drawn-out process that needn't be so difficult. Mm. And it's not a pleasant experience. It took us years. I mean, I went into, I knew there were some difficulties for my son, probably about the age 2 or 3. You know, childcare just was not working in any shape or form when I was at work. You know, the nursery couldn't handle things. I chose a childminder who couldn't handle things. And I knew things just weren't quite right. And we went through the long process of going through, you know, the channels through the GP and being referred for assessments. And, you know, and I think the thing about the process is it's not a nice process at all for anybody involved, because instantly, I'm just going to say it, they tend to look at the parents first.
Yeah.
You know, it seems definitely to be the only diagnosis where you are offered a parenting course. You wouldn't get that with diabetes or any other diagnosis. And I found that infuriating. And because my diagnosis, my son's diagnosis didn't come for years later, they wanted to put me through a parenting course, which I didn't go on because I think, what's the point now? I've been done it years here now. They took me off all the books. They didn't offer him any services or anything.
We, just to add into that, we did go on the parenting course, even though our eldest with autism was, how old, 12 probably, when he got his diagnosis. Obviously, we'd known for years. And our process took about 2 years to get his diagnosis. Different story from a daughter, but it wasn't sort of massive for him. But we decided to go on the parenting course simply because I just wanted to know what was in, what was the content of it.
And what was it? Did it teach you or
it
not?
It was actually quite informative. And I can see both sides. I can see why people wouldn't go, because it's like, I've lived with this for 12 years. What are you going to teach me about my child that I don't already know? But on the other side of it, I think there's always something that you're going to take away from that. Even if it's meeting with other parents and making connections with other parents who are in the same boat as you. That's a positive, isn't it? And that's a benefit. So if you didn't take anything from the course, you might take something from that. Or you might see somebody and think, oh, that sounds like it works really well for them. I might try that. So it's there's lots of different ways that it can be beneficial.
Yeah.
But I can see why a lot of people are just like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. And I think it wasn't a case of I didn't know any better or I wasn't unable to learn any more. For me, it was, you've offered this too late. I needed this 4 years ago. That was the biggest thing. I needed this years ago. I did not need this 5 years down the line when I know how to do it.
And also, the other thing I was going to add to that is, I know you said you were offered the course and you refused it, so they took you off the books. We went on the course and completed the course and then took us off. They still took us off the books. Yeah. So you didn't really lose out on anything. Yeah. It's just that you didn't attend the course. I think afterwards they did say to us that he could have go to a youth group there maybe, but he doesn't want to do that.
So I think one of the biggest things about being home educating and you know, my son being on the spectrum is I can totally and utterly embrace every part of him, when it comes to his stimming and his everything, his interests, his fascinations, his hobbies. I can embrace every part of that. Because let's face it, we're in a world that doesn't embrace an awful lot of that.
Yeah.
Particularly in schools where they're mainstream and geared up for learning, where he's not allowed to stim, where he's not allowed to do this and he's not allowed to do that. So it's enabled me to foster such a close relationship with him and accept literally every part of him. And it's a, you know, it's a mutual respect thing. So, you know, I do love the autism awareness and autism acceptance month, but I think it has to come from a lot of people about putting some really good stuff out there. I think when you first get a diagnosis, some people see that, you know, you get a lot of people don't, you saying, well, why do you want a diagnosis, why do you want the label? Now that just drives me nuts, because it's not, They've as if now a label's a bad thing. They've already had that in their head that you're calling it a label and it's a bad thing. Why is that a bad thing?
I know. How can that possibly be bad when you know more about yourself?
Yes.
How can that be bad?
Yeah. It infuriates me.
Yeah, I'm the same.
People say, oh, why do you want to put that label? What do you mean put that label? My son is autistic.
Yeah.
That is his diagnosis. This helps me to, and him, to understand exactly why he functions the way he does. And then even if we put that bit of paper in the drawer, shut that drawer, and off we go on our lives, you know, that's it. It's not, it infuriates me.
Yeah.
And it generally comes from people that probably have not dealt with being on the spectrum or have no idea of how it all works, to be calling them a label.
Yeah.
That infuriates me no end. And the process, I have to say, the process for getting the autism diagnosis was very long and hard and ridiculous in my eyes compared to my son who's got Tourette's syndrome, because his is so severe, it's very obvious. We went through a very different route. We went through neurology, we got an, you know, whereas what they tend to do with autism, they tend to put you down through the CAMS route, and it's not a mental health issue, you know, for all your assessments. So I've been on both the different ends and got a diagnosis literally within 2 weeks of my son's Tourette syndrome.
Yeah.
Because obviously there he was very loud and clear. Whereas when we look at autism, because so people who are autistic are all different.
Yes.
You know, they might have some kind of similar traits, but they're still all different. So it's very hard to get that diagnosis. And the other infuriating thing that annoys me is when people say, oh, they're dishing out these labels like sweets. I'm like, have you tried getting one? It's like getting blood out of a stone. What are they on about getting them like sweets?
Yeah, I know. It is ridiculous. I mean, I think in our experience, it wasn't that much of a big deal for us, I think, because with both the boys, they're classic autism.
Yeah.
You look at them, you're like, they're autistic, you know? Mm. You can't hide it. There's no hiding it in both of them. So we went through the CAMS route, obviously, and it was first CAMS, then we got the assessment, then we got the results, and then they're autistic. That, you know, that's it. It was really straightforward. That still took 2 years, mind.
Yeah.
You know, and we were straightforward.
Yeah.
Sort of going down that route with my daughter, totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because girls present so differently.
Exactly.
They are so different. Exactly. You're not going to sit in a room with like 5 autistic girls and you wouldn't be able to pick out any of them, you know?
Yeah.
You just wouldn't, because they're masking, they're trying to fit in with their peers, they're just making themselves appear so alike every other child their age.
Yeah.
And their, you know, their stims are internal.
Yeah.
They do clenching things and things that you can't see.
Yeah.
So it's such a hard process. When
exactly,
you're
I was
girls.
Just yeah, you're right there. Touching on female autism is extremely hard, I think, for those to be diagnosed. So now what we're seeing is a wave of probably girls on the spectrum as adults who are maybe want to go through that diagnosis process because they want to learn more about themselves and maybe think as and having, you know, children who are autistic makes you see similarities, maybe things, but in a different way, and you can see it within yourself. And I always say it's a positive thing, you know.
Yeah.
I don't see why a diagnosis of autism at whatever age is a negative thing at all.
No.
To some people, they might think that's the end of the world for some parents. But let me just say to those parents, please just reach out and see all the amazing things that are going on out there. Don't listen to this letter that you might be handed from the doctor saying they're going to struggle with X, Y, Z thingy. Because that's not often the case.
Mm.
It's really not.
Yeah, definitely.
If we're in a world where it's geared up for neurotypicals, of course, every person who's autistic is going to struggle at some point, because it's not geared up to just accept and embrace people. And it's bizarre, isn't it? Because they say tell people to be themselves, but not too quirky.
Yeah.
Don't be too autistic. So what, you know, they're in a very confusing world, you know, trying to navigate against a, I'd say, normal world, what is normal. But
yeah.
So it's a very difficult process, I think. But I think, you know, like any parent that's given this diagnosis, the instincts are always to just be worried, aren't they? Mm. And to think of the worst, and they hear the worst cases.
Well, I think there's 2 sides to that, because we found by the time we actually got the formal diagnosis, we knew what it was anyway.
Mm.
And we'd ummed and ahed because of our situation, being home educators and schoolers, we work around their needs.
Yeah.
So my son doesn't wear shoes.
Yeah.
He hates socks. He doesn't wear them.
Yeah.
You know, he wears Crocs.
Yeah.
That's what he wears for 14. Yeah. Wears Crocs.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Don't mind. You know, and me.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly. Doesn't matter. If he wants to wear them all day long,
I'm just
going to
put out there, we're Croc lovers here. And you're going to hate us now and switch off from this podcast.
So, but that's how, and we've always just worked our lives around the kids' needs, their individual needs, and what makes them happy.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we had massive discussions about whether it was going to be positive to go for a diagnosis, or was it not going to do anything? Was it not going to have any benefit?
Yeah.
And we thought about that for many years, probably from when our son was maybe 7.
Yeah.
Until we didn't go for it till he was 12.
Yeah.
So it's a long time. And then it was people say, you know, I'd post things and I'd say, what do you find are the benefits? What, you know, should I? And lots of people would say, oh, it's just a label, you don't need it, blah, blah, blah. But these are the ones, like you say, that don't have any kind of experience with autism.
Yeah.
So who are you to give that judgment?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not your life.
Yeah.
It's my
child's life. Because you ask any adult autistic, they will say absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And then That's the thing. So once you have, we found once we had the diagnosis, it's been nothing but positive, yeah. And we celebrated that. Mm. So we had known all along mm. what the diagnosis was. It was just getting that confirmation.
Yeah.
Really, that was all we were looking for.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got other family members that are on the spectrum as well. So we know yeah. anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was a mm. massive celebration.
Yeah.
We were so happy mm. that we got my sons, and then we got my other son, my mm. youngest sons, and we celebrated again.
Mm.
And we're still waiting for my daughters, but we will celebrate yeah. when we get hers, because yeah. it's about her having her own
identity.
Peace of mind, identity. Yes. She knows who she is. She can move forward then, say, mm. this is me.
Mm-hmm.
Accept me or,
exactly.
or don't, whatever. Exactly. But I know what I am, and this is why exactly. I am like this.
Exactly.
And
so. I think, you know, I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, it is a very positive step to gaining a diagnosis. And like we've said, and we've broached on, when people saying this label nonsense, I instantly just want to switch off to anybody that says that, because they quite clearly don't get it. Because it's not doom and gloom. It's a very positive process. Mm. And literally immerse yourself in the world of that, because there are some amazing autistic people doing some amazing stuff out there, you know, and each and every one are different.
Yeah. And it's such an individual choice. You know, if you did think that your child was autistic, then it's your choice as parents, and depending on the child, how old they are, if they, you know, are involved in that choice, whether you do go for a diagnosis, mm. same as if you're an adult and you mm. think you're autistic,
yes.
it's your choice.
Yes.
You know, and that's up to you. So if you decide that you want to,
mm-hmm.
you go and do it.
Yeah.
And don't let anyone stop you from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I do think a lot of adults do actually struggle, from what I've spoke to people about, even making that first step. It's such a big step.
You're kind of
putting yourself out there,
exactly.
aren't you? And it's so hard.
And because for so long we've looked at, like I said, each and every one of us is so different, aren't we? So you go to the doctors, or you go to, you want a GP for a referral, you want to explore the possibility of a diagnosis, and in your head as an adult you're thinking, they just think I'm going to be anxiety ridden, or they just think this is wrong with me, or that's wrong with me, because you're a functioning adult, like
yeah.
we all can be, and we can carry, you know, do things. And so it's a lot of stigma attached, isn't it, to making that hurdle, I think, when you're an adult, because you just
yeah.
think you're going to be brushed off. No, you may be just something, you know, a bit off or whatever. So it is a bit, I can see why people would be reluctant
yeah.
to want to do that.
And still, as an adult, you still have, you go and see the GP, then you, this is in our area at least, then you have to have a mental health phone call with a mental health team
yeah.
just to check that you're not actually mental.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, they talk to you for 10 minutes and go, okay, yeah. I'll refer you. Because you're like, I can tell, you know.
Yeah.
And then you go on the waiting list, which is massive for adults.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an adult, it's probably not that urgent that you
yes.
get that diagnosis
yeah.
because you've waited all this time anyway.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, the priority has to be for the children in that respect.
Mm.
But, yeah, the waiting lists are massive.
Yeah.
Even longer.
The same process, though, touching on it, when you are home educated and you think your child is on the spectrum, you don't have to be in a school to get that.
No.
There's been a lot of misconceptions where you have to be referred by the school nurse, you have to
yes.
go through the school
Senko,
system, or there's no yeah. school notes to say that they think there's a problem or a miss. That's not true. You can go to your GP and ask to be referred.
Yeah.
That does not
have
to come from school.
I did have that recently, actually, where somebody messaged me and asked me the very same question, because she had been told that you couldn't get a diet. I don't know if she was told by the GP, but she was told by somebody, a professional, that you couldn't get a diagnosis of autism unless you were in school. Which I was like, that's ridiculous. I've had two so far
yeah.
that were given
yeah.
out of school. So
yeah.
that is so wrong.
Yeah.
When I was looking at various different sort of diagnoses of different things, I did read that the diagnosis for ADHD was very different, and that you had to have two separate input from two separate sources, which would be like a school and a home, or, you know.
Well, they say that. They say that. They say that for with school as well, because they tend to send off a sensory profile checklist as well. But it's a subject I think we could talk about for hours, actually, with this, because there's so much more involved in it. With the problem is, when you send that checklist to a school, that teacher is not qualified enough to sometimes pick up on the subtle cues of children on the spectrum, especially those that mask. And see, I have a son who is a little bit, I guess, kind of in the female side where he masked a lot. So it would have gone perhaps a little bit unnoticed. But the assessment process relies heavily on a teacher's input in school, which I don't think is a particularly good idea.
No.
In my view, because that teacher is not going to pick up always on those subtle cues.
Not in a class that
in a class size. Of 30, he's not going to pick up that my child's, you know, picking his skin to death and sitting there really anxious ridden or whatever when there's loads of hustle and bustle going on there. So that impedes the diagnosis from the start.
Yeah.
You know, so it's for when you're in school, trying to get on that ladder is extremely difficult.
Yeah, I've heard from so many people as well that say that exactly what you've just said, when their child is in school, they kind of hold it together as much as they can. It's when they get home that they just explode.
It's well known, actually, for them to be able to do it and then withhold it. Because, actually, we're in a lifestyle where a lot of us on the spectrum go about our daily life, you know, trying to just get through the day and mask a little bit until we get home and we can be ourselves. We all have moments where we just going through, you know, when you have a particularly sad day, you just try and pick yourself up, don't you? Go through the day, you get home. Oh, and it's a lot of the case for children on the spectrum. So some teachers just will not see that, and then they'll wonder why the child is exploding at home. So I use like the fizzy coke analogy. You know, they can it's show ship shook all day. They get home and it all and that used to be the case for us a lot.
But that's when they might question the parenting.
Exactly.
Because they think, oh, it only happens when they're with the parents.
Yeah. Exactly. And that word used to drive me nuts. They're fine. I'm thinking, well, they're not fine. Quite clearly there's a problem. So I think if for some in the school system, it's not a necessarily pleasant experience because you get judged on all sorts of different fronts, you know, for a lot of angles. So just literally reach out, I think, to the autistic people out there, the groups. There's lots of groups out there that are run by autistic people that are fantastic on Facebook. There's one called Agony Auntie Ortiz. She's absolutely brilliant. She talks about so much, you know, stuff every day, does daily vlogs. She's autistic, so I haven't got an autistic child. And they are so informative. I wish I had them years ago. I wish I'd looked at that. But like I said, once you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that would be my advice, literally to just tag them in, ask them any question. And like I said, you know, home educating for me has literally allowed me to embrace every part of his autism. You know, there's nothing that's been a problem.
Yeah.
Like it might have been in the conventional system out there. But for here, we just embrace it. It's just who he is, and he is who he is. And he'll be the first to say that I hate these people that say it's like my superpower. He hates that.
Yeah.
It's like it's not here, it's not there, it's just me. You know, I don't have a superpower, and I don't not have it. It's just, he hates that when he hears that. You know, my suit autism is my suit. He said, I'm just me, you know. Yeah. So he teaches me so much.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to him, and he teaches me so much. You know, he really does. But I know that there's so many battles for parents at school because they've got such a battle on their hands with school.
I don't know. Obviously, we've never experienced that, having never been in the school system. I don't know how any parent would get their autistic child into school. Yeah. I wouldn't even get mine up in the morning, let alone dressed. Up, dressed and fed. I ain't doing that before 11.
Yeah. Well, Dawn, this is what I'm saying. That's why then they get the EWO on their backs because they can't get their child into school.
It's terrible.
And instead of understanding the fact that there's some issue, because some of them might not have a diagnosis, so unless that school sees that diagnosis, they're marked unauthorised. I used to have the same thing. Arch, I've been through so many pairs of shoes with my younger son when we were in school because he hates socks, he hates shoes. But we're croc family.
Same.
Yeah,
I've
spent, literally, I'm not joking, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds on shoes and socks.
Yeah.
He hated wearing the
uniform.
Do
you know what's really funny, right, in our situation? I'm exactly the same, and our kids are a similar age those ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
Exactly the same, right? Then I had a daughter, then that was fine, and then I had another son, and I thought, yes! All those hand-me-downs, all those tens of hundreds of pairs of shoes that have been unworn with the label on in the attic.
Yeah.
I'll pass them on to him. What happens? He's autistic. Don't wear jeans. Yeah. Won't wear particular shoes. I'm like, darn it. Charity shop.
I've even bought the shoes where you've got the fitted toes. Well, my son took one look at them and said, they're disgusting. Okay, that's another list then of shoes that will sit there that are really expensive that you don't like wearing. But because we're not in school, he can wear his Crocs.
Yeah, exactly.
He can wear them whatever weather he wants to. Yeah. He can wear whatever t-shirts and oversized top because it's comfortable. I mean, for these children, it feels like barbed wire on their skin. They are not doing this to be fussy. You know, it hurts them. But we can do that here.
Yeah.
He can be who he can be and there is not a problem.
Mm.
When are we going to have a world where it would just be amazing, wouldn't it, if they could just be who they could be anywhere?
Exactly.
In a perfect world, no, we wouldn't need EHCPs and diagnoses because every school would just literally accommodate every child and all the same, given to their needs. But it's not like that.
Yeah.
People want, you know, people just don't accommodate.
So, another question. So how old was your son when you discussed autism with him? Or did it just happen naturally?
I don't know. I think when he got his diagnosis, because I think he felt different, and I think they do, and I don't. And he felt different, and I think that's the thing. He wanted to know why he was a little bit different, and I was very just honest with him, and I said, "You are autistic. What's that?" And I said, "Well, it's just a different way of thinking, different way of doing things, maybe." And he went, "Oh," and that was it.
And what that's age all was we discussed. That?
I believe that probably he would have been about 7.
Yeah.
6, 7. And that was it. You just think differently.
Yeah.
You know, you think differently to us or other people. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
And that was it. And we just carried on our lives. But he teaches me so much more.
Yeah. Because I do see that quite a lot in various different groups. Because I'm in lots of different groups. Some of them are parent support groups where it's non-autistic parents with autistic children, and I find some of their posts quite difficult.
That's the one that I say I struggle with the staff, but then I think me and you, Dawn, because we're probably on the spectrum ourselves, we can see why it feels just uncomfortable hearing that. We're not saying they're terrible parents by any means, it just feels uncomfortable because
it feels like they're sad about having that, you know,
that is why I just think what have they seen that autism is, you know, what have they been watching, what have they been listening, what are they seeing? You know, that's, they think, my only thing is that they struggle with school and daily life on a day-to-day basis because these children are fitted and pushed and molded and square pegged, hammered, and have to sit on their hands. They can't say this, can't do that. What person isn't going to explode over that?
I do find that the odd time I've posted on groups like that, I do get shot back in flames. And like, they're asking a question and I'm giving them an honest answer. You know, as an example, how do you stop your child from disrespecting you or, you know, shouting back at you? And I kind of say, well, my child doesn't do that, but I respect him. Mm. I respect his wants and needs and wishes, and he respects me.
That's the thing with unschooling, though, isn't it? It's a constant giving of love and respect, given in an abundance.
Yeah, and from all areas. Everybody feels the same way. Everybody respects everyone else. It doesn't matter. Because you're 6 years old, you're not less important than me because I'm 40.
Yes.
Or, you know, less important than a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old. Everyone's important.
Exactly.
And everyone's views are important.
Yeah.
But I say that on those groups and they just say, don't be ridiculous.
I know.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I normally just get called pippy and get told to just push off. And I do. I just put my head down and just walk out again. I think, oh, I just shut this door then and I go through the other one. It is like that, isn't it? I'm not pretending to be that it is perfect and, you know, I'm the perfect parent by any means. But I have discovered, like, something that I just want to tell everybody about.
Yeah.
And I am lucky that I home educate. I'm fortunate enough that our home is our solace. It's our safe space. He can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and whether he wants to sit there flapping his hands and stimming and twiddling his toys for hours on end, that's fine.
Yeah.
We can even do that when we go to the restaurant. I am not going to stop him doing all that because that's him. But what I wanted to do is home is a place where it was just
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, do this, do that, do this, do that, when he's been out and struggled with having to do everything just how that everybody else wants him to.
Yeah.
And then they come home, and then some parents are still, but you have to do this, do that, do this, do that. They're going to explode.
Yeah.
There's only so much their sensory issues and everything can take in. And having to be this person everybody expects them to be is going to last for before they explode. I mean, it's like saying to anybody else, I want you to smile all day, be happy at everything, give everybody what they want all day, and do that every day all day.
Yeah.
And then tell me you're not going to just go a bit nuts at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. We don't expect the same behaviour from adults, do we? So why should children be any different?
Exactly.
Why should they be treated any different?
Exactly. People still, I think, see it as a behaviour.
Mm.
And I think that's really difficult for them to just get over. It's not a behaviour. It's just there a neurological difference there. And they can't change that. They can't change how they are wired, how they think.
Mm.
Why should they?
Yeah.
Just because it's considered not the approach, they're not the norm. I mean, that's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Mm. And I feel sorry. I just feel like, you know, home should be your safe space, your solace. You know, after the day of having to just conform for them, which they shouldn't have to do, they should be able to come home and just do what they want to do.
Mm.
Really, because me and you and I do. Well, I do.
Yeah, totally, you know, do. I read a post the other day and it said, I think it might have been on one of the autism groups actually, saying, if you haven't got to go out, do you get dressed or do you stay in your pyjamas? I'm like, pyjamas? All day. Why make more washing? That's what I'm saying.
Do you know, I actually own more pyjamas than I do clothes. That's becoming a problem.
And that's another thing I love about the unschooling side of it.
Yeah.
If my kids want to wear their pyjamas all day long, they're damn well going to wear their pyjamas all day long. And I remember my youngest at one stage, one day, a particular day, I'll put him some clothes on and he said, "Ooh, are we going out?" And I was like, "No, I was just getting dressed." And he's like, "Oh, I thought we were going out because I usually just wear my pyjamas."
That's so funny.
But if you're comfortable,
what's
clothing in your cupboard.
Exactly.
What does it matter what it looks like?
Well, the good thing, obviously, is my son, he doesn't like certain clothes. So he will literally live in either shorts or T-shirts, cotton. So they have to be really soft, really, really big, which is fine. So we all have our comfortable clothes, but in a school, he couldn't wear that.
Yes.
You know, so for a start, that's a problem from day dot. So if you've all of a sudden got a school uniform for them to get into, by the time you've even got into the car, you know, their sensory overdrives are going nuts because they're wearing these horrible, painful clothes. The lights are going, everything's busy. They probably don't want to eat that because they don't like the taste of that. And
they've probably hardly slept.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Before they even get to school.
Mm.
So my son wears all these big, oversized clothes. That's fine. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Some people might like wearing skinny jeans, which I find really uncomfortable. Yeah. He likes wearing,
We're exactly the same. Bottoms. And we have, with my son, the tops aren't too bad. And I must say, we struggled a lot right through his childhood. But as he's progressing into teenage years, he's becoming more accepting of different types of clothes.
Yes.
Which it isn't a massive step. So some people would be like, so what? He's got a different T-shirt on. But for us, that's a really big step.
Yeah.
He's never going to wear jeans. We know that. You know, he's never going to wear trainers necessarily. Yep. But for him, even having a slightly different feel of top
is a big step for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now he's got to the stage where when he was growing up, he went for a stage of just wearing shorts.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was onesies.
Mm-hmm.
Onesies all the time, whether it was day or night. And then it was one particular type of tracksuit bottom from Tesco's.
Yes.
That's the only one he would buy. So I went out and bought about six sizes in a row.
That's what we've got.
Same ones. Now we've got to the stage where he said, I'll wear any tracksuit. As long as they're tracksuit bottoms, I'll wear them. And I was like, oh, hallelujah, I can't believe it. But there's someone else, I say, would look at that and go, so what? But to me, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's a massive turning point.
But I think also, though, because you've not forced it at any point. You've not said it. He's just done it when he's ready.
Yeah.
So my son just never wears coats. He cannot wear a coat.
Yeah.
Whether it's snowing, hailstones, it could be a hurricane out there, he will not wear a coat because they're too restrictive and too fitting. So he has got a coat, which he decided he liked the look of this very coat because he loves pink. And he loves anything flamingos and pink. So he saw this pink coat that he's got hanging up in his back end that he will occasionally wear if he feels it's really cold. But he is generally doesn't tend to feel the cold. So yeah, but there are all these things that they just allowing them to be.
Yeah.
Because in their own mind, they become he's becoming aware of things in his own time. Is we've recently just got a wet room installed for, you know, his own self hygiene and self care because he's quite slippery on his feet. Had dyspraxia and hypermobile, so we wanted to get something installed so we can start taking care of him. Who wants your mum in there holding the shower so you don't fall, you know, at that age? You just don't want that. So we've got that installed. So now he's taking himself off to get showered literally every night before bed. And that was a boy that literally would not get anywhere near a bath for weeks on end.
Yeah.
So when I see these posts in the groups about my child doesn't want to wash, I understand that. I know that. But actually it's very painful for them. It's not just they don't want to do it. And we've gone through that moment over because it does happen. It will come a point where somebody might say, well, that smells a little bit or something. Mm. And that would just be one little comment from a peer or someone to make them think, oh. So things happen.
Yeah.
They really do. Sometimes you just don't have to force them. I feel very fortunate to be able to be home educating. I just don't know what I'd do without it because for us, it's brought a harmonious home and relationship with us all.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I know that mine wouldn't manage in the school system.
Yeah.
Now.
No.
Absolutely not.
I do think about, occasionally I think, you know, do you think he might go to college when he's 14? And I think, no, probably not. But I think, could he have his own business? Definitely.
Yeah.
I see an entrepreneur there.
Yeah.
And I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, what's
I think exactly the same thing. It's like,
yeah.
Really, would I want to have my own business, be my own boss, work my own hours and do what I want? Yes. Would I want to listen to someone else tell me what to do? No. Probably not. Not now. So,
yeah,
if you're doing that from the beginning, go for it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And I just, I think it's been a positive experience all around for us. I can't sing its praises enough. I really can't, on how I think having autism and unschooling for us has just been a godsend. It really has. It's allowed me to embrace every part of him and our relationships all with each other. Have not been born out of stress because we have to do things, you know, in school. So, I just think for us it's allowed him to breathe. Because you know, when you're so stressed every day through everything that you, from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed, and then you go to school and you do all these things that you don't fit in, and you've been forced to do things and you can't do this and you can't do that, and you get home and your parent makes a simple request and things kick off and big explosions, it's no wonder. It's absolutely no wonder. I think if you've got a child that's struggling like that, I feel desperately sorry because I've been there and I've done that. But there is an option of home education, you know, even other options.
It's definitely something to look into. And again, with looking at the unschooling side of it, or the autonomous learning, there's loads of groups on Facebook that you can join and just talk to people about it. I find it so reassuring. So I think even having being in schoolers for such a long time, you still get times where you just think, oh, what am I doing? Am I doing the right thing? Or, you know, they've been sat there doing that for that amount of time, and everyone else says they limit their screen time should only be 2 hours a day or whatever, and you think, what am I doing? But then you speak to the whole community and you're like, actually, no, I'm doing exactly the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just need that support. You need that network where you can just say, can anybody tell me about this, or does anybody have an experience of this? And you'll get people that are just going to be supporting you.
Yeah.
And it's just so beneficial, I think.
Yeah. I feel so privileged to have found this journey for us, because I feel that we have such a harmonious home life, and, you know, my son wants to go out and about more now. I mean, obviously there's still socially you might find things still awkward and some things, but his anxiety levels are so much lower now that his resilience to things is so much better. So when your anxiety is that bad, your resilience is zilch. Mm. You can't tolerate anything. It's understandable. When your nervous system is completely and utterly frayed, being any demand on you to do any more is just not going to work. Like I said, I feel privileged, really, to be doing it. I just wish other people could see that there's another way of parenting on the spectrum sometimes.
Yes.
Because what they're faced with is the picture of what neurotypicals think things should be like.
Yes.
So they're battling with that. My child's got to fit in here, he's got to do this, he's got to do that. Actually, he doesn't, actually.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't be made to do that. I think if it's been forced that much, where the child's in isolation all the time, they're not doing this, they're having so many meltdowns, they're whatever, that is not the right place for them.
No. No, that's it.
It's really not. Mm. And I've been there as well. I've had all those battles. Mm. No, I know it's not easy. But the alternative wasn't looking pretty either. This is exactly why we took this route. Sometimes I don't think... Sometimes there's too many options. When I was faced with there really not being an option, the alternative was a child who probably would have unfortunately committed suicide because of how bad his mental health was. I felt like I didn't have that as an opportunity. You know, some people, I can't choose it. That wasn't a choice for me. I could not do that. So, I feel privileged, really, that we're allowed to adopt... I have this lifestyle and this balance at home, really, for all of us, and he can be who he is and we can all be who we are without having any added pressures of having to conform, because that's the problem, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. So, should we wrap that up then?
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, and we'll be back next month with another podcast.
Bye.
Bye.